that what I will be saying will therefore be a proper introduction to the words we're going to be hearing, the message that we'll be listening to from the Rabbi Sherry Shalita, who's a very distinguished Talmud Chacham, Maariv Torah. I have the distinct privilege of being acquainted with his late father, Zichrono Livracha, not only a well-known international figure, but also dealt with great wisdom, many issues over many years. What occurred to me about the topic was that, if you think about it very carefully, the sense that touches us on Hanukkah is not the sense of listening at all, but the sense of looking. Gemara teaches us that a roeh ner Hanukkah, the person sees the candles of Hanukkah, he makes a special bracha, a rarity. He makes a bracha, birchas haroeh, and the bracha is she'asa nisim la'avoteinu. All of us, when we kindle the ner Hanukkah, recite that same bracha. According to some, we're reciting the bracha not so much for the kindling itself, but because we are also looking at the very candles that we light in our home. So for a few moments, I'd like to contrast, if I may, these two senses, the senses of, using the Hebrew terminology, or was telling for our purpose, the sense of re'iyah and the sense of shmiyah, the sense of sight and the sense of hearing. The message of Hanukkah, are we listening, is not the same as the candles of Hanukkah, are we looking? Because the answer to this latter question is certainly in the affirmative. We're all going to be looking at the Ner Hanukkah, every one of us. Second question, much more difficult to answer, is will we be listening to the message of Hanukkah? I believe more than just simple imagery and a distinction between these two questions. Let me explain. What is the basic difference between looking, seeing on the one hand, and hearing, listening, focusing, concentrating on the other? Let's go back to history. We know that the miracle of Hanukkah, great miracle, but it's not the greatest miracle in our history. Arguably, the greatest miracle in our history was Kriyas Yam Suf, when the Yam Suf split in half. And our rabbis have taught us about this. Ro'asa shivcha al hayam, mashalo ro'a yecheskel metbuzi v'mara hanabuz. A simple shivcha, a maidservant who was privileged to be present at this incredible event of Kriyas Yam Suf, saw more than the great prophet Yecheskel saw in the Masa Merkava, the Nebuah you read about at the beginning of Yecheskel, the Torah of the first day Shavuos. Incredible. What happened to Yecheskel? And what happened to the ship Kalayah? No, Yecheskel went from Perek Aleph, where he saw the Mara Nebuah of Masa Merkava, the lesson of Nebuah, if you will, to become one of the greatest prophets in our history. Whereas the Shiv Kalayah is not a part of our history. What became of her and her descendants, we know nothing about. As far as we know, the Shivka Shiroas Alayah disappeared into oblivion. And the question can be raised, why is it that the Shiv Kalayah was Roasa so much, more than Yecheskel, disappeared? Yecheskel, who saw the Mara Nebuah, remained a part of our biblical tradition for all generations. Interestingly, immediately after the parasha of B'Shalach, which describes for us the miracle of Kriyas Yam Suf, about which it just says, Roasa Shiv Kalayah, the maidservant saw, comes another parasha. Vayar Yisrael, not Yisrael saw, but Vayishma Yisrael. And Yisrael heard. Yisrael was listening. And what was he listening to? Rashi comments. He was listening to Kriyas Yamsuf, among others. Kriyas Yamsuf. Yisrael didn't see Kriyas Yamsuf. He wasn't there. But what did Yisrael do? He heard about Kriyas Yamsuf. That doesn't just mean he heard. His auditory nerve was tickled by someone who came to tell him a story of Kriyas Yamsuf. Heard, listened to Shema Yisrael. Doesn't mean to hear. Hear, O Israel. That's how we translate it. It doesn't mean what to hear. Means to hear, to comprehend, to understand, to listen carefully, to internalize. This is what it means to listen. And so, it's easy to see, it's much more difficult to listen. I'm sometimes of the impression that the reason that Hanukkah is so popular in America, the most popular holiday perhaps in our calendar, in the broader, more general Jewish community, is because it tickles your eye. You see it. You look at it first. Ooh, wow. Attractive. I see light burning, twinkling, illuminating. Fantastic. This is great. But also superficial. A person can see the Ner Chanukah. He can see the Kayim or Roas HaNer to make a bracha shel tzedisim. But it goes, how do we say it? In one eye and out the other. Can't use that metaphor. It's a mixed metaphor. But that's what it really means. He sees it, and it has no impact on it. It's a raw tashiv chalayah. There's so many thousands, unfortunately, of Achenu B'nai Yisrael who see it, and they're Hanukkah. Whoa, boy, it's exciting. They'll see it in public squares. They'll see it in people's homes. And they'll know, duly know this is a Hanukkah holiday, but they go about their business as if nothing happened. And a famous columnist once wrote in Eretz Yisrael, you think about it for a moment, are you listening to the message of Hanukkah? Or as he put it more pointedly, if you were alive at the time of Hanukkah, whose side would you be on? Would you be on the side of those few individuals who you now refer to as fanatics and fundamentalists? Or would you be on the side of the, to give the pun, enlightened Hellenists who live their lives based upon the modern culture of the day? Author should be mentioned. My time in Eretz Yisrael 30 years ago, his name was Shmuel Schnitzer. Olam HaShalom. He was a columnist of Ma'ariv. That's what he wrote. Whose side would you be on? That was a message. I don't know who was listening, but it was a message, a powerful message. Who were these heroes of Hanukkah? The heroes of Hanukkah were in effect Kohanim. Kohanim, the shaman of Levi. Now listen to this. We just read last Shabbos 10 days ago about the naming of the first three sons of Yaakov Avinu. Think for a moment. What are we referring to? What are the names? What's the shortage of the names of these individuals? The first one is named Reuven. Roshan. Second one is named Shimon, Kishoma Hashem. Oh boy, these two senses, the sense of sight, the sense of hearing, back to back. And we know that these two senses are representative of how we react to things, by seeing and by hearing. But hearing doesn't just mean to hear, but to listen, to concentrate, to listen to a message, to internalize it. You know, both are required. We had to see the Kriyas Yamsuf. We even had to see the original revelation. Roa Masakolos, had to see it. Because that's our first reaction. After we have to grab our attention. That's what goes on in the media, with advertising. We'll do anything, so any image to put up there to grab was a big soundbite, the big focus. What happened? We all know the story about this girl. He kills the enemy. Mila Shemela. Today's world, you do it in the last about 20 seconds. Okay, commercial. Or the next scandal, or the next whatever thing's going on in the world. You go on all that too. But they're not in the Kashmadayim. Something about this girl. They focused on this lesson. We were with Mila Shemela. And they took that inspiration and they went. And it wasn't a one-day battle. It wasn't a six-day war. It wasn't a one-month war. It went on and on and on into history. It went on years. Focus, concentration. We call today Shmir. So the message of Chanukah, are we listening, is for us a much broader lesson. Not to see candles burning. Important to catch their attention and cut down to what they were doing. They made it as simple as it's all important. But they really wanted that after seeing these candles, we can start to listen to the message of Hanukkah, the message of the old-time religion, let's call it that, the original tradition overcoming a secular, anti-Torah, cultural kind of society. It happened. All there was concentration, deep concentration. Vizeidim biad oske Torah sefer. And oske means to make it your business. Involved deeply in the study of Torah. This is the lesson of their Hanukkah. We know that their Hanukkah represents Torah, but out there. But it represents not just Torah, but this deep commitment to Torah. Whether it be Torah study, or support of Torah, or involvement in the family of Torah, whatever every man, woman, and child of Klal Yisrael does, but does it with a passion, with a focus, with a concentration. That's the Shmia accompanying the Rehiya, leading to the Leviya, if you will, and the ultimate. By the Kohanim, Kachushev and Levi, combined these two senses and led this wonderful miracle. So, as we prepare to reach the wonderful day of Hanukkah, it's not enough to look at the candles, not enough to have the flash, if you will, of light. It's important, it's critical, it's important for our understanding and our appreciation of to know, in fact, are we listening? Are we going deeper beneath the surface, the shallow and the superficial, the depth of what Hanukkah is all about? The answer to the question is up to you. The title was, are we listening? Yes, me or you as a visitor. We mean all of who came tonight to hear what has to be said. And that's why I'm so happy that we have this wonderful guest speaker who we've come so far away in the middle of a very busy schedule. And I hope that you will, in fact, yes, be listening to what he has to say. So when next week Hanukkah comes around, we go beyond the simple visualization of candles, deep into the lesson of this wonderful holiday.
That's something that I would have known that today as a marriage, I wouldn't be here. Not because of that, but rather by two of the best men. I wouldn't dare compete. Anyway, I want to share with you, I have a letter to go. But I preface my remarks. The famous Gemara. You all know the story of Hanukkah. Gemara Shabbos. My Hanukkah. What indeed is the miracle and all the festivities, my God. Gemara says, my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? Before telling us the story, and that it's a yontif, it tells us that the halacha, they not allowed to eulogize in these 8 days. That's not the answer to my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? Now, one church from a great Torah scholar said, what the Greeks want to do is they want to annihilate the Jewish people. They wanted to eulogize them, make a statement. The Jewish people eradicate them as a nation. My Hanukkah, what is the yontif of Hanukkah? Man Yoyim, 8 days that we declare the Loyim of Mizpah, nobody's ever going to eulogize our people. Netzach Yisrael, the eternity of our people. To Torah and Torah study. So my Hanukkah, yes, what is Hanukkah? All 8 days of Hanukkah declare and proclaim and attest to the eternity of our people to Torah and Torah study. Commandment, you're even not a halacha that you can't do a job. Declare it and shout it out. Command you 8 days that will teach the Yavonim forever and ever. The Lord of Ismagar, no one's ever going to write us off. Torah, our eternity indeed flourishes and go on. So I prefaced my remarks by stating that for me to come to Riverdale and to see how Torah flourishes in this beautiful community, this is the greatest testimony to loyal and misfit boy. No one could ever write our people off. And I take great personal chizuk and encouragement to see even come out just to hear Torah talk. I want to focus on an interesting halacha that many of you might know. But let me begin. Most years there is one Shabbos Hanukkah. And when that is the case, Shabbos Hanukkah is Parshas Miketz. This year we have two Shabbos, Vayeshev and Miketz. But most years it's Parshas Miketz. And many a commentary point out how the very first pasuk in Miketz has within it many allusions and hints to the holiday, the Yontif of Hanukkah. But I once heard from a great, great Mefarish, Vayehi Kedesh Shnasayim Yomim, who was the end of the two additional years that Yosef had to sit in servitude in jail, 2 more years. The word Shnasayim, Parshas Miketz, the Shabbos of Shabbos Hanukkah. Shnasayim, Shin, Nun, Sof, Yud, Mem. 4 years is an acronym, a contraction for the following words, a halacha. Smol ner tadlik, on the left side, you light the menorah, yamin mezuzah, and on your right side, is the mezuzah. So this, in the very first words of the parasha, we allude under the hint, we don't know how to do. Now what indeed has these words have to do with Parshas Miketz? But on the left side, the Menorah is Hanukkah, the right side is Mezuzah. More so, why is it so that the halacha based on the Torah right there at Shabbos, and then Shulchan Aruch and Seth Pastor's slow now tackling, on the left side you like the Menorah, on the left side you do it. Then Mezuzah on the right side you like, the right side you have to do it. Why is this the case? And in fact, let me hear, that this is the Gemara, and this is how it's called in the Shulchan Aruch. But the Zuchus of Rabbi Goyen, here's another one. Small night, Patrick, on the left, you have a Menorah. Yamin Mezuzah on the right, you have a Mezuzah. So that when the man wearing a talit kotan of tzitzis, a beggar of tzitzis, walks through the door, you're surrounded with three mitzvahs. Ner Chanukah will be on the left, Mezuzah on the right, and the man in the center wearing his tzitzis, three mitzvahs. And then we'll have the pasuk in Keheles, or Shlomo, Chut HaMeshush. If you have a three-link chain, guaranteed you will never sever. Well, man. disagreement between a grandfather and a grandson. In one of the Rashi and his grandson Rabbeinu Tam are disagreement. How does one hang on? Rashi perhaps up and down, straight. Rabbeinu Tam, his grandchild, says no, flat. So the dispute, vertical, horizontal, between grandfather and grandson. Dispute from the family. So how do you hang on? Asking the Shulchan Aruch, what are we going to do? Should we listen to Rashi or listen to Rabbeinu Tam? Now we can't do like we do with our tefillin, that many people first put on Rashi tefillin and first put on Rabbeinu Tam. What are you doing with this? One up, one down, what are you going to do? How old the Shulchan Aruch? That the Alakzim, we put the mezuzah on our doors on a slab. Why on a slab? Because the grandfather said, one way, the grandson said another way, we compromise. The dispute with the family, grandfather and grandson. We compromise by a lack of this is our work. Put it on a slip. The mezuzah on our door signifies the ultimate level of shur, compromise. It was compromise. Chanik, Merachat. So the Pnei Yeshua asked the famous question, what does the need of this miracle? They had to go find a jug of pure oil, shem and tar. What did they need tar and oil? After all we know, the halacha tells us, when you're dealing with communal service, bitzibur, when a community is doing a service in Avaita, the rule is, tumah, hutra, bitzibur. You can use even oil that is tomeh, if it's communal service. So why did this whole thing to do it? About finding pure shemitar, communal service allows and permits to use non-kosher oil. What's the need to do it? That's the very good question. Why the need of a miracle? I once heard from my father, Zechariah Baruch. He said, you know why the significance and need of a miracle to find pure oil? Yes, there's no mistake. The story has it that they went into Yevonim, to the Beis HaMikdash, and they took all the jugs of oil, and they were metamed. They made them come. Why didn't the Yevonim go into the Beis HaMikdash, take all the jugs of oil, and make a bonfire, and destroy all the jugs of oil? What's the significance of making them come? My father said, because the Yevonim knew the halacha. They knew that tomei liquor oil could be used in communal service. And this is indeed what the Yevonim want. They want you to go out and use tomei liquor oil. We don't mind if you do your communal service. Do it first in a compromised fashion, so to speak. That would be, even though Hutjim and Siva, it's not a compromise, but they perceive it. If you do it with tomei liquor oil, that's compromise. That's watering down, diluting our service to the Rebbeinu. The Yevonim said, you know how we will eradicate the Jewish people? Slowly, a slow process. Let them first do their avodah in a compromised fashion, with tomatic oil. The next thing that will lead to eventually, compromise in avodah Hashem, that will lead slowly, 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 the people will go away. Their religion. So since this indeed is what the Yevonim wanted, they didn't make a bonfire and destroy the oil. The Yevonim wanted us to do our service of Tumatik oil. So that was a necessity for the Hashmonaim to go find pure oil. Because to show the Yevonim, you want us to compromise in our service to Rabbi Shalom. Compromise is when it comes to a grandfather and grandson. Compromise, they will put a mezuzah on a slant. But when it comes to doing the avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, there is no room for compromise. There, you want us to do it with not pure oil, we'll show you. We'll work and we'll find pure oil, not the dead time. So in essence, when someone walks into one's home, general life, whatever on your right side is what you focus on. When you walk into the home, on your right
chavero in the home, in the confines of one's home? Where do you focus and where do you elevate and where is your right hand? On the message of resistance. In the home, there's going to be the compromise of the slam. Children have a dispute with a parent, the spousal disagreements. Alaksa, there's that slant. As you go in, you elevate the message of compromise. That's the right as you go into your home. But when one goes out of one's home, and you have to face the world at large, not the pshat that the Ner Chanukah is on the left. When you go out, the Ner Chanukah is not on the left. When you're walking out of the door of your home, Ner Chanukah is on your right. Because then what do you focus on? Where is your right hand pointed to? It's to the Ner Chanukah that we don't dare compromise. And we never use oil that was impure, albeit that it was permissible. We went and used only Shemen Tar. And one goes out to face the world. And facing the world, a world where in today's world, no coincidence, Hanukkah always comes out the same time as the Jewish holidays. Somehow there was so much confusion in the outside world. The glitz and glitter of Madison Avenue has somehow found a place in the Jewish home during Hanukkah. So many of the customs of the outside world have found a place in Madison Avenue, have found a place in Hanukkah, and you'll see so many people. Don't you remember this? A few years ago, when Dukakis was running for president, he was busy letting us all know he's going to light Neros Hanukkah and his wife's going to have a tree. Or the other way around, right? They're busy. She was going to have Neros Hanukkah and he was going to have a tree and we're going to have it all together. It seems to have this confusion of it all together. Ner Chanukah tells us when you're out facing the world, so you're walking out your door to face your world on your right side, is the message of the Ner Chanukah telling you, don't compromise. You can't dare using pure oil, although permissible, but that gives a lens of perception that we're willing to war down out of the Jackson. Go into the home, on the right side, facing into your home, the concept of compromise, the field man to man, there has to be room for compromise. Perhaps this is what it means, the third thing of the talus, wearing tzitzit. The third mitzvah is the wearing of the tzitzit. When you go out your door, you have now all three mitzvahs. The answer is, we know that one is not permitted to wear shatnez. Linen and wool together is prohibited by Allah in the Torah. However, when it comes to the mitzvah of tzitzit, this is permissible. Zemer who fished in Yachtov, you let them mingle the two together. You know the reason, albeit that the reason that Shabbos is prohibited, the Chok, we don't know the reason. We'll never know the reason of the Chok. But there's a fascinating Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma tells us in the beginning of Bereishis that since Cain and Hevel, they had a fight, quarrel, family dispute. What was that over? That was over one's karma being accepted and one's not being accepted. Two kavanas. Cain's karma was from pishkin, from flax. Hevel's karma was from sender, was from wool. And they had a dispute. So the first dispute in mankind took place over wool and linen. Tell us the message that Hashem said, if wool and linen brought about the first dispute in mankind, then there will be a prohibition. Well, Silvash, you can't wear wool and linen together. Wool and linen together is because it was machlekes dispute in the family. And since you're allowed to have wool and linen together, why is that? Because since we know tzadik yud tzav, the letter that the word tzitzis equal, Rashi tells us, 600. Tzadik is 90, yud and 10. Now, like 90, you're 10, so 400, 600. Tells us Rashi, with the 600 in the words it comes, and the 8 string making 608, and the 5 knots is 600. 113, because tzitzis signifies the beggar of Torah. That's Torah. Torah in its ultimate is tzitzis. When you have the level of Torah, if one lives by Torah and Torah guidance, then indeed Tzemer u'Fishtin can be together. Shabbos can be put together, because Torah dictates when we have a dispute, when we don't compromise, and Torah will dictate when we do compromise. So albeit we can't ever have Tzemer u'Fishtin together, but if it's on a Torah beged, which Torah dictates, then we can bring the two together, because Torah is above quarrel. So on the one side of the door, we have the message of mezuzah, to compromise. On the right side, to go into our home with other mechamerot. On the other side of the door, the right side, as we go out, we have the message of menorah. Don't dare compromise and dilute and look for impure oil or be permissible. And in the middle, we have the man wearing his tzitzit. Because the tzitzit is that message that sometimes you could put them together. Tzemer u'Fishtin. Sometimes, if it's a beggar of Torah, but more times than not, you're not allowed to put together Tzemer u'Fishtin. Yosef Atzadik, Ahivi Ketra Sani Yomit. Yosef was now to embark upon, now he will be the leader for all mankind, the leader of Mitzrayim, Mishnah Melech, most powerful person in Egypt. And Yosef is a Jew, and he's going to have to deal with the society at large, and he's going to have to know what dictates and what rules, and how does one guide himself, a Mishnah Melech. After all, right then and there, Yosef himself on Rosh Hashanah is being brought to the king. And right there we know Yosef was given a haircut and he shook his beard on Rosh Hashanah. Because Kovet Malchus dictated, when you're facing the king, you have to trim your beard. You didn't do it, you have the guy to do it. But Yosef knew it as a halacha. Halacha says, Kovet Malchus. Some of you might know. 1961 on Tisha B'Av, my father was faced to meet President Kennedy for a very, very crucial decision facing the state of Israel. He didn't want to go with Tisha B'Av, and he called up the great Torah sage, Aharon Kotler, and said to him, Rebbe, it's Tisha B'Av, what should I do? And Aharon Kotler said to him, you must go. You must put on your shoes in the morning out of respect for the president, and you must shave that morning on Tisha B'Av. And my father looked at him and said, Shiva, Tisha B'Av! He said, Kavod Malchus, respect for the king, president. Years later, Bobby Kennedy wanted a mezuzah. And he said to my father was the closest friend to the Kennedy, he said to him, I want a mezuzah. But we all know that halacha says in Shulchan Aruch, you're not supposed to give a mezuzah to a guy. The only time it's permissible is if they're able to, but my wife is, but he's supposed to try to refrain from giving a mezuzah to a guy. Bobby Kennedy wanted a mezuzah. My father went to Moshe Feinstein, he said, what should I do? Bobby Kennedy keeps asking me for a mezuzah. And Moshe said to him, first of all, if a guy asks, and he asks, and he asks, and you're allowed to give it. How much more so in the case of the Kennedy? Kovet Malchus. Kovet Malchus. My father still felt uncomfortable. The next time Bobby called him, he asked him for the mezuzah. His father said to Bobby, you're about to embark about a campaign to run for president of the United States. So let me give you, why should we put up the mezuzah here on your senatorial office? Okay? Act like this. We'll wait till you become president of the United States, and we'll hang it up on the White House. Bobby said, great idea, Morris. You know, I like that idea. We still have to have mezuzah in my house. We have the mezuzah my father had bought. Maybe if you would have given it to him, I'd have become president. He said, I don't know. But there was a concept that followed in halacha. Mezuzah and halacha. The message that I leave with you today, by Yehi Mikhein Shemasayim, lies at the beginning of the cake, small net habit communism, because Yosef HaTzadik now embarks upon becoming the leader of all mankind. But Yosef knows, you know what has to be my guiding force? Small net habit. When it comes to things that have to do with the outside world, it's not small, it's not on the left, it's on my right. I can't not dare compromise on my religiosity. It means mezuzah, but when I have to deal with things that have to do with the other mechavero, then Yosef's message indicates to himself was, you have to know the dichotomy, when to use compromise, shura, and when dare not dilute our religion before, that's the beginning of Parshas. Some sober rights. We say, thank you, King. Lamanachai Berea and Abra Shonabach. Laman Beis Hashem Elokeinu Avak Shetovach. Tell them that some sober. Lamanachai Berea, when it comes to dealings between man and his brother and friendships, Adabra Shonabach, I will seek and speak words of peace, words of compromise. That's the mezuzah. When you come into one's home, achai v'reya, you're looking at friendships and relationships. That shalom off words of compromise, that mezuzah on that slant on your right, compromise between grandfather and grandson, petty disputes that are in the family. And people wake up too late to resolve petty disputes. And my kehillah, one of my misfounders, one of my congregants recently cried to me, oh, if I only would have made peace with my father before he passed on, before it was too late. How often do we find his brother and sister having disputes? Achai v'reya, friendships. Then on the right side is the mezuzah to compromise. Achai v'reya, showing for words of peace. But my base, Hashem Elokeinu. But when it comes to dealing with religion, Hashem Elokeinu, the Rebbeinu Shemayim and his Torah, Avat Shatova. It's not words of peace, shalom. There's no pshara, compromise. We don't dare dilute it. Tovach, only what's good for you, Hashem. That's when in our Hanukkah, when we go out in the workplace, there the message is that we don't dilute it with impure oil, albeit it was acceptable. Yeah, we don't dare compromise. Avat Shatova, only what's for you is good to find Hashem. I want to conclude my message. Normally don't do this. I'll tell you a story of my dad, the Katharic Rural. Those who don't know or do know, and I definitely don't do this, it's not as easy as for me, I'm proud of many other things. The New York Magazine, one of the most prestigious magazines in the world, once said he's the most powerful rabbi in America. Cardinal O'Connor wrote in the Archdiocese newsletter, the New York Archdiocese newsletter, that out of the Catholic religion, his mentor on religion, Rabbi Morris. I want to tell you something over this second school limit. Some of you might remember, 7 years ago, Giuliani's first inauguration. Did something historic. He waited for an Orthodox rabbi to deliver benediction. Never before was it given to an Orthodox rabbi. But it's interesting because that Orthodox rabbi was my father, the Catholic Baroka. Some of you might remember on the television. The next day it was the front page of the New York Times, a picture of my father and Giuliani. 2 weeks before that inauguration day, the father, the retired professor, underwent emergency open heart surgery. Giuliani came to the house to visit him. And he begged him, if he has enough strength, it means that much to him, that he come to deliver the benediction at his inauguration. Father put it over, he didn't know if he would have enough strength. He decided
rabbis, the four rabbis, the Orthodox rabbis, that would make a great thing. We have doctors. Doctors have said that if he wears coats and a scarf and a hat and he's bundled up, it would give him permission. So now he called back, and my father said, yes, I will come. And he said to my father, Rabbi, so that when I told Cardinal O'Connor that you would be coming, the Cardinal said, if the rabbi is coming, and I want to change the order. Don't remember the Lambton operation 2 years ago. The Cardinal was first. Rabbi was at the end. But out of respect to Rabbi Sherer, I'd like to reverse the order. Rabbi Sherer should be first, and I will be at the end. With respect. This is what he told my mom. The day of the inauguration, I come to the house to accompany my dad to the inauguration. The picture was really good, the open heart surgery, the man of 72 in prime. Service are there from Giuliani's office. They waited to take us to the car. They were taking the inauguration. They remember 7 years ago, it was 10 degrees now. 10 degrees. And my mother was so upset about this decision that we were going. I accompanied my father into the car. He had his coat on, his sweater, his scarf, his hat. Those of you who ever saw him, thank you.
and menorah, the firmness, which is the embodiment of Eliyahu, then Eliyahu will indeed come